we would like to introduce probably the most compelling figures in our sports locally on the scene today. This is a man in the toast of the town. No one is talking about anyone else more than this man, other than Dak Prescott, Trayvon Diggs, Ezekiel Elliott, and Micah Parsons. But right after that, we have the great Mike McCarthy.
Coach, thank you for...
I mean, David, great. I tell you, we need to talk after 6 p.m. more. This is awesome.
I'm a different person then.
Yeah, definitely. A lot different than 10:15. That's for sure in the morning.
Is it a pleasure to talk to him and not actually have to look at him?
That's the beauty of radio.
And that's why we're on the radio.
No, I hear you. No.
Well, Coach, thank you for joining us. We know you certainly have better things to do with your off week, but it's very nice of you to join us here for the next little bit here on Intentional Grounding. David has nothing but extraordinarily nice things to say about you, so I'll
In print, but other than that.
Right, so I'll let him. I'll turn it over to him at the beginning. He has some football questions, and then it will fall to me later to ask the softball questions. So, David.
Yeah, Mike, just to start off very quickly here, let me be the very first to ask you, how is Dak Prescott's calf strain, and is he still in the boot right now, and really what, if anything, can he do this week other than stay off of it?
I saw Dak at the office this morning. You know, he's going through the rehab process, so we're going to take the whole week and just stay in that mode and kind of see where he is on Monday. So, I mean, that's the plan. Nothing's, really changed since Monday morning or Monday afternoon when we talked about it. So, but Dak, he's in there and he's doing everything he can, and we'll just see how it goes. And we're optimistic for Minnesota.
Can he do some of that water work in the tubs you have there? Or is it really strictly just staying off of that and other sorts of conditioning?
That's a great question. Actually, when I saw him, he was headed to the hot tub, so just to get loosened up before. He got into the rehab process with Britt. So, yeah. So exactly what he did specifically, I can't tell you, but he'll be in there all week.
And the one other football question we wanted to ask you before we get to the meat of our conversation today has to do that this is the bye week. The players aren't practicing this week, and part of your message before everyone left was to be safe and smart. There is one incident that has come to light with DeMonte Casey. In his DWI on around 2-3 in the morning on Tuesday. Can you talk about that, and have you talked to DeMonte?
Yes, actually, I visited with DeMonte today. It's unfortunate. We're definitely aware of everything that that went on, and it's a pending legal matter right now. I really can't comment much on further than that, but we're definitely aware of everything that happened.
Well, Coach, I appreciate you. And again, we're joined here on Intentional Grounding by Coach Mike McCarthy. And Mike, one thing that that David said that you were looking forward to talking about that wasn't necessarily football related was a passion that all three of us tend to share here, which is Ted Lasso. Well, not to abruptly switch gears here, but I've seen Jason Sudeikis talk extensively about how pro coaches have reached out to him to proclaim their love for the show. And there was a story in the Wall Street Journal earlier this year that had the headline, "Why Real Coaches Want to Be Ted Lasso." Steve Kerr kind of summed it up as the lesson of the show is culture beats scheme. So I'm really curious what speaks to you about Ted Lasso.
Well, I think, I like the way they do the episodes. I mean, there's a couple. They had the one in the second season that, it was a little offbeat, but, I think they do a great job of having, the messaging is outstanding. The writing of the show, I think, is, fabulous. Obviously the humor is excellent. So I just love the lessons of developing culture, and I agree, I agree with Steve Kerr. I think it's something you look forward to. There's not too many shows I know in my adult lifetime that kept waiting for season two to come on, and I was hoping it would happen before the season started, because it's difficult to watch TV during the season. So, but I love everything about it. I think the acting's incredible. I think the writing's top notch, but I love the messaging about growth and culture, the development of it all, and he does a great job.
But that's, you know, it's interesting because it's sort of something that you watch it from a different perspective. We watch it as the fans in the stands, and you watch it as the man on the pitch, as it were, in this case. And there are really many takeaways from it. You know, the be a goldfish mentality, forget about the last play, forget about the last game, the whole believe idea, to how this season was very explicitly, in fact, about talking about and dealing with mental health issues in professional sports, which obviously your quarterback has been very, very open about. So I'm sort of wondering, you know, certainly it takes you by surprise in some ways. I assume you start watching it because, hey, here's a show about a coach. There aren't many of those, at least none that star Craig T. Nelson. But I'm curious what it is as the show progresses that you begin to learn from it, certainly based upon your experiences, because, you know, look, you began by coaching, by volunteering as a coach, essentially, and really loving and learning about the game. So as you watch the show and begin to realize that this is not going to be just a wacky sitcom about a fish out of water, but this is really, in fact, going to speak about you, your profession, and about your relationship with your team.
Oh, definitely. I think it's very, very well asked and very well said. I think it's clearly taken from, you know, past experience. I don't know exactly who all the writers are, but you can see the real life situations, whether it's, you know, from Minnesota State all the way to the pitch in England. It's real. You can see that they've addressed some of the I don't say the hot topics, current topics in sports. You know, you can see the analogies that are in every episode. So I think it's a great reach to our culture and to our society. But definitely, I mean, I love it from a coaching perspective because, you know, at the end of the day, it's about relating to your players and to your staff and getting everybody to believe in that common goal and make the sacrifices. So, you know, there's so many different ways to deliver messages, and it has to come into your personal style. And I think it's one of the components of coaching, and you learn it as you move up the ranks, because you see it time and time again, you know, as people, you know, have more responsibility and as they move up the ladder, that there is a potential for people to change. And I think that's a big mistake when you do that as a coach.
I mean, that's an interesting point. Is it something that you can relate to? Are there moments in the show that you can directly contrast and compare to experiences on your own? Is there a, you know, I know David wants to talk to you a little bit about this as well, but it's interesting because in some regards you had a bit of a Ted Lasso first season experience last year, being dropped into a pretty close-knit locker room and having to get to know guys who only knew you by reputation and record. And certainly as you have to get to know them, as they get to know you, everybody's expectations have to shift a bit, right? And you have to alter your perception of who these guys are and how you relate to them.
Oh, definitely. I'll say this. My transition was a little easier than his, coming from Wichita State, or where exactly he was coaching in Kansas. But it definitely, I like the analogy. And then you throw the pandemic in there, and, you know, then, you know, our adversity was higher than normal. But yeah, I agree exactly. It's the transition year is always the foundation, you know, moment, whether you like it or not. And, you know, trust me, I'm very much in tune with, you know, what the results were last year. But I can't tell you enough that the lessons and the experiences in those adversity moments we went through, I think it's definitely has paid forward, and it's a, you know, part of what we're building this year.
Mike, I know you haven't had a chance to watch this season yet, but from what you remember in the first season, just in the interactions in the coaching staff and their conversations about how to get the players to buy in on something, or interactions in the locker room, have you seen some of those moments and kind of flashed back to similar moments that you've had in coaching, or is there anything that kind of stands out and mirrors some experiences or parallels some experiences you have had as a head coach?
Absolutely. I mean, where do you want to start? With Jamie Tartt? You want to talk about Roy Kent? I think we've all had, you know, this type of experience. You know, the locker room is the most, it's the sanctuary. It's the most important part of professional sports, in my opinion, in the way those personalities come together in a structure that you put around that locker room, and the support and, you know, the energy, the consistency, the regulation, the maintenance, you know, and it's all part of it. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it has to fit, or, you know, the group as a whole is not going to, you know, get to its potential. And there are trials and tribulations that you go through every year. And, you know, sometimes it takes a year to get the culture right, or, you know, get the teaching structure the way you want it. And, you know, it's in every sport's a little different. Patience is not common in our industry. And we know that it's part of it. But, yeah, I love the whole locker room dynamic, the personalities that, you know, and they have great insight into professional sports, because, I mean, I don't think there's an episode where I haven't, I know I'm always laughing, but you can definitely relate to so many of the scenes and situations.
Has there been, in watching it, do you watch it strictly as entertainment, or when one of Ted's approaches to a situation, do you look at that and go, well, wow, he really, do you critique it? Do you go, well, he handled that exactly as I would have handled it? Or he went, huh, that's an interesting, I hadn't thought about it, but that is a different way to approach it, and I see why he did it that way.
Well, definitely. I think, like anything, you know, there's different theories that you gotta stay true to. And what I meant about, you know, anything as far as the situation you deal with, you know, just in a sense of the reinforcement theories, you know, you have positive reinforcement, negative reinforcement, or zero reinforcement. And I love the fact that Ted Lasso, you know, he comes with positive reinforcement the majority of the time, because, you know, that is the best, you know, path for growth, you know. But I'm trying to remember the scene early in season two where he was coach, is it Led Tasso? His alter ego came out, and, you know, to me, that is a great example of, you know, there are times in sports, particularly especially in leadership, where you have to use some negative reinforcement. You know, I think, you know, our generation, David, growing up, we saw a lot more of it, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago. You know, it's definitely, I know just in my time in the NFL, it's not as common, you know, in volume as it was, you know, back in the 90s. So I think just being in touch with that as a coach and have an understanding of the generations that you coach, you know, and the kids that you coach, you know, that's all really important.
Well, you know, it's interesting, and we're here obviously with Dallas Cowboys head coach Mike McCarthy. Coach, and you had talked about, this is something that actually came up just a week ago, as a matter of fact, when you were asked about John Gruden and what had gone on with there, and you actually said we all need to treat each other better. And it was very interesting because there were many comparisons made at that point to this is something Ted Lasso might in fact say, and this is proof that this is the changing mentality in the National Football League. And I sort of wonder, did you get that kind of feedback from that comment?
I didn't get any feedback from the comment.
Really?
David, you know, David's different tonight than normal. No, I'm kidding.
Well, I appreciate you bringing that out in him.
That was just an honest answer, you know, to a tough question that we all had to answer, and, you know, and I've, you know, I've coached with John Gruden back in the early 90s, so
yeah.
I think the part that, you know, when anytime you hit something that's, you know, you have to deal with, I've always taken a step back and say, okay, what could I do better, or what, you know, how would I do this if it was a, you know, second, if I had a second dance at it, or learn from, you know, situation as, you know, as John's going through. So I think it's important. I think it, you know, we all come from somewhere, and, you know, I think we all have moral compasses, and, you know, but at the end of the day, everybody has the same intent, and it's about doing the right thing. And, you know, I don't think there's, you know, I think there's crossing, you're seeing the crossing over of generations, and things that were said, you know, beforehand are totally not acceptable now. And I think this is, frankly, for the future, is going to be all for the better. But let's be honest, we're transitioning out of some of these times.
What is that transition like in terms of, you know, as someone who's been coaching for a long time and someone who made it a clear intent to become a coach. You gave up an MBA program to, against, I think, your father's wishes, in fact, to decide. You decided you took a class on coaching and decided that was the thing that you wanted to do. So I am curious, you know, someone who worked in a toll booth to pay for the time you spent volunteering as a coach. You know, certainly you grew up during that very, very voluble period in coaching, and to see a transition during the last decade or so must have been a pretty significant change for you. And I sort of wondered how you've handled it and what those observations have been like.
I mean, frankly, personally, it's been a very natural, you know, evolution, because that's the way I was raised. I mean, you know, my parents were both very big on respect and, you know, listen to your language, you know, how you treat people. So, you know, protect your last name, you know, be prideful from not only the family you come from, but, you know, the neighborhood you come from, you know, because forever, you know, and I'm probably no different than, you know, anybody else in that generation. When you leave and you know, go off to college, people would ask you where you're from, and I'd always say I'm from Greenfield. I mean, I think people thought Greenfield was like a city back in Pittsburgh. But the point I'm making is, you know, growing up in Pittsburgh at that time, everybody has so much pride in their neighborhood, and I think those lessons and those experiences, I mean, they carry with you. So you know, treating people the right way, you know, my parents were always big on that. They're always very active in the community. You know, my mother, you know, worked in restaurants and then ended up working for, you know, the state in a district justice, you know, system there. And my father was in public safety for, you know, his whole career. So I think that's, you know, I was raised the right way. I definitely know that.
Well, Mike, we wanted to talk to you about that too, because and this goes in with Ted Lasso. You look on the backstories and all of this, and part of what you did growing up was you worked a lot in your father's bar. You cleaned up at Joe McCarthy's Bar and Grill on Alcorn Street, I believe it was.
That's right.
And can you tell us about, again, everything prepares you for where you are now. What were some lessons that you took out of that, or what? I want you to go anywhere you want, but I do remember I was struck one time you talking about where you were watching people at the gambling machines and just how they approached it and what, you know, how that stuck with you. But that story or any other from working in the bar and kind of what you've taken with you and how it's impacted who you are now.
Well, there's a lot of stories at the bar, as you can imagine. So Rich told me to make sure to keep it above board. But I think, you know, going back to Ted Lasso, he's obviously very comfortable at the bar, and he can throw the dart. So I always get a kick out of that part, you know, in the episodes. But as it does remind me of my dad's bar, because, you know, you have what he would call steadies, and, you know, your steady customers. And, you know, at that particular time in Pittsburgh, the mills were rolling, and you had the shifts that went from, you know, 8 in the morning to 4 p.m. and 4 to midnight and midnight to 8. And, you know, at the break of those shifts, you know, the bar was packed. So 8:15, the bar was packed in the morning. You know, 4 o'clock, 4:15, it was packed in the afternoon. At 12:15 at night, it was packed. So, I mean, you learn those lessons of, you know, it's, you take care of your steady people and make sure that they get a little extra, you know, as opposed to, you know, just the other guys coming on. That's part, you know, of being a bartender. And I've always looked at the equipment department, you know, the strength conditioning department, the trainers, and those staff, and most NFL places I've worked at, you know, those departments are really, you know, located right around the locker room. So I've always looked at those guys as bartenders, because one thing I learned working there and being a bartender, you got to know your people. And I think the best part of getting to know people is you got to learn to listen. And I learned that at a young age. You know, people would sometimes say I was, you know, I was shy or quiet, but frankly, I always learned a lot more when I was listening than when I was talking. So, and I learned that at a young age working in that bar.
Well, I assume you learn a great deal when you're having to clean a bar bathroom on a Saturday night.
Well, Sunday morning, yeah, no doubt. It's, you know, the accuracy is not as good on Saturday nights, I can tell you that. It's, I dreaded walking down them steps every Sunday morning because the smell just got stronger for every step that I took.
I'm not sure you learn a lesson other than people are just generally disgusting.
Yeah, no doubt. And just, work fast. I didn't enjoy that by no means, that's for sure.
You know, it's really interesting to me, you know, it's weird how we always reduce an NFL head coach or any head coach of any sport to a single play or a single moment. And I think about this a lot whenever there's a discussion on this station or somewhere else about clock management or going forward on fourth and one, this very armchair social media hand-wringing over how could you do such a thing. And it tends to remind me of how little we know about a coach, how much they've studied, with whom they studied, what they sacrificed to get this job, how many people you've learned from over the, you know, we certainly talk about these last 30 years in coaching and sort of the evolution of coaching. And I sort of wonder how much attention do you pay to that? Or knowing your background, knowing your rationale behind each decision, and knowing that there is a price to pay for each mistake and certainly a victory to celebrate for each good call, I sort of wonder how much of that stuff impacts you at all.
Well, I'll say this. I can tell you calls that I made, you know, back in 2001. You know, I was a coordinator in the NFL for close to 20 years. So, you know, I came up the quality control route. You know, so I have great appreciation for individuals that go the long way, because I feel like I took the long way to make it in this league. And, you know, and with that comes work ethic and you know, just you got to do all the little things and the details. And you adhere to that. So no matter, you know, as long as I do this, I still have routines that I, you know, develop back as a quality control, more importantly, as a quarterback coach. So I never really paid attention to it before, because, you know, when I go home or, you know, after a football game, there's, particularly when you're calling plays, there's always four or five plays, or, you know, there's just a number of plays you wish you could have maybe, you know, gave the quarterback an adjustment with it, you know, if this happened and so forth, and that's football. So I've done it long enough, and I watched Kellen go through that a little bit. So, and I think all play callers go through that. You worry about those one or two or three plays where, you know, the other 78, you did a heck of a job. So, you know, I think that's part of it. But I'll say working in Dallas, it's definitely different than my last job. It's just so much more. And I think also, I've been in the league a long time. I've been a head coach a long time. So I think anybody that's coaching this league the longer you do it, the more, you know, it's the things that they say negative about you just kind of stacks up, you know. So, and I just think it's part of the job responsibility, frankly. And so, and that's kind of where I leave it. But, you know, we put a tremendous amount of time in game management and those type of decisions. I'm a big process individual. I believe in process and preparation, and so our team knows, you know, that we're all committed to doing it the right way. And at the end of the day, you know, the decisions I make are to make sure we give the players a chance to win the game. And then that's, to me, needs to be the end result of your game management, you know, situations. And I get it. Analytics is great, but analytics has become a weapon for the media. And that's part of the, you know, that's part of today's evaluation process. And I just think with game management, I think you need to probably break that into two categories. Because, you know, you have game management situations that either come down to being, Dave, I think we talked about this last week. You know, game management situations, you either take the, you know, aggressive approach or the neutral approach or you're conservative. And, you know, I don't know how that's a wrong decision, you know, so that those are, because there's ebb and flow characteristics in every single football game. You know, there's matchups that you may be, you know, more concerned about than the public may be aware of. So that those kind of things don't, you know, they don't bother me, because, you know, we're being aggressive at a certain point in the game for a reason. We're being conservative at a certain point in the game for a reason. So, but hey, if there's a game management mistake, and then to me, that's real. I mean, you know, that's real. You know, we all own that as coaches, and the media today is a lot more forthcoming with the criticism. And I just think that's part of the job.
And again, the game's so fluid. There's so many decisions made. You're processing maybe something that happened two quarters ago, and you're running a similar play now, and that factors into whether or not what decision is made in that time. I mean, it's just I would just imagine the number of possibilities just in what is going through your mind just changes exponentially over the course of a game right up to the end.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's why you call it preparation. There's a prelim, you know, before the game, you have a good idea of, you know, how far you're going to go for it on fourth down. Because, you know, the most important part of going for fourth downs is to make sure that, you know, your play caller, make sure Keller knows, you know, coming out of second down that he's in a four down situation. Because, you know, it'll affect his, you know, it could affect his third down call. So, you know, that's the part that's most important. So when your process is in order, you know, you're giving the players, you know, really clean opportunities to be successful. And at the end of the day, the pace of operation in those decisions, that's what counts. That's what really stresses a defense or vice versa. So, you know, that's why I go back to process. You know, I promise all of our fans, we put a tremendous amount of time, energy, and detail in the preparation to make sure we're ready to make those decisions.
Well, Mike, we need to start wrapping this up now because we only wanted to ruin a portion of your Wednesday evening, not all of it, and I think we've infringed on that enough. Real quick, bringing it back here, do you have your diamond dogs at the start?
My diamond dogs?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, I tell you, I think I have a couple diamond dog units, frankly. I think you got to have – You got to have, you know, I have a GPS diamond dog group that, you know, and then there's, you know, there's, you got a football ops, and, you know, I think, you know, we'll, then you have your personnel guys, and then and then you have your everyday, every moment guys on the coaching staff. Definitely. I mean, I love that. Yeah, diamond dog segments are pretty funny. But
Robert and I assume that Rich is your Higgins. We assume that Rich is your Higgins, right?
Yeah, he told me to keep it clean on here, so we'll leave it at that. We'll give him Higgins. Yeah,
we'll definitely give him Higgins. Well, Coach, we could do this for another hour, but I know you have things to do, and we certainly do appreciate it. It has been a tremendous pleasure to get to talk to you, and I hope we have another chance to do this somewhere down the line. I know David Bing, your Trent Krim, is probably no great delight for you, but
Yeah, David's got to work on that hairdo, that's for sure.
Well, you know, that's not his hair, actually, right?
That's a great comparable right there.
Well, thank you, Coach. We really do appreciate it. Thanks so much.
And very quickly, Mike, before you go, I don't think Robert knows this, but you're a big UT baseball fan, right?
Yeah, I've been to a few UT baseball games. What a great program. What a great place. And my understanding is your son Harry is a catcher for the team?
He's a bullpen catcher. He's one of the bullpen catchers for the University of Texas baseball team. So I'm glad David or Rich filled you in on that particular biographical tidbit. Harry's listening right now. In fact, he just texted me a photograph from the bleachers there at UT at the baseball field. So he'll get a big kick out of hearing that.
That's awesome. How's the team doing this year?
Well, they start fall ball, in fact, on Sunday. They have a few games, and then spring season starts here sooner than one expects. So I expect them to be back in the World Series this year, and I look forward to traveling to see them, knowing that my son's somewhere doing something important.
No, that's what a great atmosphere they have there. Yeah, I enjoyed my few opportunities.
Well, maybe I'll see you at a game sometime in the spring.
That would be awesome. No, I have a lot of love for Austin.
Excellent. So do I, as a graduate and as someone who now sends a few dollars down there every little while. So, yeah.
A few.
Well, thank you, Coach. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you for the time,
Mike.
Thank you,
gentlemen. Have a great night. Hey,
enjoyed
thank you for having me on.
You bet. Thank you, sir. That's a great.
Take care.
Mike McCarthy joining us here on Intentional Grounding. I'm sure we have to get to break immediately, so let's do so now.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.